and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
I just want to say I'm sorry if you hear a dog barking in the background throughout this recording.
Okay, why do you have a dog?
I haven't got a dog.
I thought you might have finally taken up my advice about getting a sort of army of animals to get rid of the mice.
No, it's just, I don't know if you remember a few weeks ago, I was talking about my slightly mad neighbour who I thought had got a new dog.
Yeah.
Well, this dog has taken up to barking pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's most loopy time, seems to be in the middle of the fucking night, by the way, which then sets the foxes off, or the foxes set it off on a higher plane.
Right.
Oh, I mean, I don't want to be the person that, I mean, I'm not going to confront him, by the way, because he's a fucking lunatic. But there's a bit of me that's got to the point where I don't know whether to... I don't want to be that bloke who phones the council and go, oh, excuse me, there's a neighbour with a dog who's very loud.
Well, really, I'm sure annoying. You could do it anonymously.
Yeah, well, that's why I put that voice on. I couldn't work out who it is. I don't know if I want to be that bloke.
No, and I've done enough recording with you as well to know that we regularly have to stop for sirens going by or the...
Helicopters.
Air ambulance. Yeah. Croydon somewhere. Yeah. Oh, God. Haven't you got another a very noisy neighbour who likes to pray quite loudly as well?
I've got the praying mantis next door.
God, it's quite the cacophony.
Saturday night, I don't know what was going on. I mean, they're lovely neighbours, right? And I don't really hear them very often. They're actually very quiet, apart from the odd bit of very loud praying. But the other night, she was out in the street doing a lot of loud praying very briefly, and then she disappeared. She got in her car and was off, I'm assuming to some sort of prayer emergency.
But what, like an exorcism?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I didn't want to get involved. But she was running out of the house, and I could just hear her shouting all about the blood of Jesus or something, and like really loudly. Like, and I thought something was terrible was happening. I thought like something was going off in the street, and she was offering some prayer support, but then she dashed off in her car. I wondered if she'd put some sort of, you know, some police cars, you can put a light on the car. I wondered if there'd be what colour light you could put on for for like a prayer emergency. Somebody can put a blue light on, oranges, that's all for like roadworks and stuff. Would you have to a white light? Could you have like a flashing white light for prayer?
I think so, or like a solid white light.
Oh, just solid white.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And would it need a different siren?
Well, I thought you could have just like a chorus of angels kind of thing, you know.
Very nice.
Thing going.
I've got to admit, if I was walking down the street and there was someone in a fairly panicked way on the other side of the street chanting about the blood of Christ, I would give them such a wide berth. And you've got to live next to this.
I mean, they're lovely people. I get on with them very well. But they're very religious people, and they like to do a lot of praying.
No, that, I mean, I'm not against being religious and praying. What I am against is screaming about the blood of Christ and running down the street.
Well, that was a new thing. I haven't seen that one before. And it seemed to be a one-off. It doesn't seem to have happened again, but I'm going to keep an eye on the situation. And the other night, I mean, you know the noises foxes make. We've talked about that before.
We have.
This fox, I don't know. I don't know if it was just doing it to... I got the impression it was doing it to wind the dog up.
That's strange.
Maybe they're having some sort of conversation, but it seemed more like a row if they were having any kind of communication between the pair of them. It was more like a row that was going on. I wondered what they might be rowing about. Maybe the fox was telling the dog to just shut the fuck up.
Well, ironically, all this recording, I haven't heard a single peep from your end other than you complaining about how noisy it is. Thing is, you could put in an... that's hard to say.
I thought you were doing that Muppet song.
You could put in an anonymous complaint. That really is hard to say. But I would feel awful then. I mean, if they came around and gave him a ticking off, that's great. Mm. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
But what if they came around and euthanized the dog?
Oh, it's tough shit, really, isn't it? I mean...
I feel awful.
No, I did think, should I be... I mean, I could phone like the RSPCA. So I don't think this man's fit to have a dog. He clearly can't control it. He can't train it. And then they take it away. But then I'd have to look at his sad, forlorn face every time he goes out to his cab. I mean, he'd still be shouting at something because he's always shouting, but he wouldn't have the dog to shout, and then I'd have to feel guilty about that, wouldn't I? So,
well, then the barking would be gone, but you'd have to contend with sobbing.
I don't think he'd sob. He'd just shout. Just be more shouting. He does shout at a lot of things. He shouts at the cab when that doesn't start. It's a lot of shouting at the cab.
I imagine that if he knew as well one of you, but he didn't know who, had stitched him up.
Yeah.
That could cause him, you know, a tailspin of rage, shouting and screaming at everyone.
Well, he almost does that anyway. It's one of those neighbours as well. I don't know if you've ever come across anyone like this, but he doesn't... I mean, obviously, he's a cab driver, so I think he probably works late, but he seems to be up all night. You know, you wake up in the night and you hear him out. He's always doing something in his front garden. He's always moving stuff about. You suddenly hear a lot of clanging and clanking at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he's out there doing something. He's just one of those people. It's like, just go to fucking bed.
I think everyone's got that one mate as well who is always a bit too loud. You know, not much volume awareness built in.
Yeah.
I think I'm fairly good at volume control when we're in a sort of private setting. But I am aware that I can generate quite a lot of sort of kinetic energy and noise by I tend to fidget quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're a fidgeter, but I wouldn't say... I mean, you do make lots of sort of incidental noises. But you're not sort of a loud... There's just people who are loud and... I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's like a look at me thing. You know, it's the same we talked a few weeks ago about people with loud cars. There was a guy who went by on a motorbike the other day, in the middle of the night, with the loudest motorbike in the world. I mean, we've got to ban those things at night. If you've got a there must be some sort of decibel meter. If your vehicle goes above that, you can't use it beyond a certain time. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it almost felt like he was taking the piss. It was like he was going to rev it up as he went past my house. It was like he knew it would annoy me. I do think I'm beginning to be targeted.
Do you?
Just by life in general, not by anyone in particular. When you look at what's happened over the last few weeks, just the different things. Last week's incidents of being likened to Hugh Jackman and Wolverine, to the knockdown ginger attack on the house,
yep.
The fox or cat droppings on top of my outside container thing, the fox or... cat doings on the grass. This week, I got a phone call from my dad, who'd walked past my house earlier in the day, and he said, "I just thought I'd let you know, Trev, just be careful if you come out your house. There's a big old dollop of dog shit right on your step." Brilliant.
It was only a few months ago that you had human excrement on the front path.
This is another thing. So I don't want to bring this the tone of the podcast down.
Lower than talking about various kinds of poo.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to continue the trend because just outside my back door at the moment, I've got a little pile of bricks that need to, at some point, be cemented onto the front wall. Something's decided to have a dump on top of those. I mean,
really?
Why on those? You've got the whole garden, Trevor. Why are you having a dump on a brick?
How very strange. I think you've seen the film Falling Down, right, with Michael Douglas?
Yes.
I can just imagine you slowly killing all of your neighbours one by one with a shitty brick.
Well, it could happen, Ben. I don't think I'm far off the snapping point. But anyway, moving away from... you know,
shitty bricks, yeah.
Fecal matters. I say moving away from fecal matters. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But I do want to just mention politics very briefly, Ben, because on last week's podcast, I sort of half jokingly said maybe you'd like to be Chancellor because the current one won't be in the job very long. I didn't think 4 days later we'd have another Chancellor. I thought maybe it would last a little longer than that. We've got a new Chancellor now, Ben.
Yeah, we do.
And it would seem Prime Minister might be up for grabs. So I think my idea from last week of all of us having a little go might become more of a reality.
You say Prime Minister might be up for grabs. At the moment, I think people are surprised she's still here as of Monday of recording.
I know. It's just all a mess, Ben. And I was listening to Channel 4 News the other night, and I don't understand all the economic stuff. That seems to be that's where all the shit has hit the fan, or the bricks in my case. I don't understand it all. I sit there and I watch it, and if all this stuff that they talk about, I don't understand it. I glaze over. I feel really stupid when I watch the news, and they're talking all about the economy.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So what I did understand is that, basically, when it all went to shit, after the mini budget.
Yeah.
To try and defend themselves, a lot of the Conservatives were saying, well, it's all, there are lots of other reasons for it. Jacob Rees-Mogg had his say. So I was listening to Channel 4 News and they had some expert on and they were asked the question by Christian Guru Murphy. Well, I'll let you listen to it. I'll let you listen to what the question was and how the expert answered it. I think a very honest answer, which you don't get very often.
And just finally, I mean, just because there's been an argument between the government and various experts about who and what is really to blame for the turmoil. Jacob Rees-Mogg's been out this morning saying, well, it's mostly to do with interest rates. And everybody else, it seems to be saying, well, actually, it's quite a lot to do with the government's mini budget. Can you just give us your verdict on that?
Well, to use a non-technical term, that's pretty much bollocks.
I mean, no hanging about there.
Wow, that's a bit extreme. I tell you what, on a similar subject, I was a little bit surprised when this all went down and they first started talking about the possibility that the current PM, Liz Truss, would have to move. They got on well-respected Andrew Marr. And he was talking to an LBC presenter and he said that, oh, I wouldn't be surprised if she goes with this SHIT show.
Really?
And I thought, hang on a minute, Andrew Marr's sneaking around all the rules. You can't, yeah. You certainly can't say shit on the radio, but no one ever told us you couldn't spell,
can't spell it. Well, the thing is, if someone swears, as we well know, you do have to apologise. Christian Guru Murphy did apologise. Just have a listen to him apologising.
Julian Tett, thank you very much indeed. And not sure if we're allowed to say that, so I'm sorry if you were offended. But over to you, Cathy.
So he's apologised. At the end of the programme, he came back to the subject of the swearing and he just wanted to clarify whether he needed to apologise or not. And I think this will remind you of conversations we used to have in radio studios.
Before we go, I've had time to clarify whether that word Gillian Tett used to describe Jacob Rees-Mogg's explanation was within the rules. And on the Ofcom regulator website, it describes it as medium language, medium, potentially unacceptable, less problematic when used to mean nonsense.
Less problematic when used to mean nonsense.
Fair enough.
He did have one last apology to make, though.
Go on.
I should, however, apologise to people who were relying on subtitles, for whom it was spelt bullocks.
Miriam Margolyes was on the radio this week, on Radio 4. Have you heard this?
Yes, I did hear about this. I'd like to hear it again, though.
She'd been on talking about Robbie Coltrane. By the way, how sad is that?
Oh, that really ruined my day, that news.
It ruined my week a little bit, that fucking...
Got home from a hard day's work, and that was the first thing I found out when I turned the news on. I was like,
I know, it was one of those. I got it pop up on my phone, and it was one of those. I was like, oh, shit. That's a gutting one, that one.
So anyway, that one cuts deep.
She was on Radio 4. She was just wrapping up her tribute to Robbie Coltrane. Now, I don't know whether she thought that she was now off air or not, but knowing her track record of swearing, I think she may well have known. Have a listen, because she was told she was still on air, but whether she wasn't listening or not, I don't know. But here's Miriam Margolyes on Radio 4, the Today programme, which is probably the most listened to and most respected news programme in the nation.
The fullness of him as a person and as a talent, that's what I treasure and remember.
Miriam Margolyes, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure. I completely agree with you about Cracker. Absolutely wonderful drama. Must watch it again.
It was. I never thought I'd be...
No, it's all right. Just,
now you can
we're
speak
live on.
On
air. Yeah. Carry on.
I thought I'd be sitting in the seat.
Justin will help
Jeremy
you out.
Jeremy Hunt has just
seat.
Sat yes. in is what you
were
about
is,
to say.
The thing is, when I saw him there, I just said, you've got a hell of a job, the best of luck. And what I really wanted to say, fuck you.
Oh, no, you mustn't say that.
But you can't say that.
Yes, no, you can't say that. You've got. We'll have to have you out of the studio now.
That's fantastic. There was definitely a moment where I could have completely forgiven her for thinking, that's concluded, this the link's finished, we're off air. But then they very clearly said, we're still on air.
Yes,
and then she carried on and said, fuck you, you bastard.
It's the bastard I enjoyed more than the fuck you.
So Trev, a couple of podcasts ago, you were giving us one of your recommendations, and it was This England.
Yes.
Remind us what that is.
It's a drama set all around the time of COVID, all set in the shenanigans that were going on behind the scenes in government and Number 10. Kenneth Branagh plays Boris Johnson.
And you mentioned at the time the prosthetics he wears, which you said were a little bit off-putting.
For a while, I did get past it, but in the first episode, I found them a little bit distracting, yes.
I mean, after that, coincidentally, I was flicking through the TV and I saw a trailer for This England with Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
And he looked like a spitting image puppet.
Yes.
And it looked ridiculous. I don't know how you managed to get past that. For anyone who doesn't know what spitting image is, it was a... do I have to explain spitting image to people know what that is?
And it's back now, isn't it? It's back, so...
Oh, good.
People know.
So basically, it looked ridiculous, the prosthetics. So, yeah, it looked like a sort of monster Boris Johnson, like Monster Johnson or something. It was awful. I mean, it got me thinking about other things. I mean, that was quite a big one, but little moments in film and TV that just spoil something for you or you can't quite get past them. And one that I always think of when I was sort of thinking through these in my head is, you know, I think it's very public knowledge that I am one of the world's leading Frasier fans.
Yes.
There is a detail in Frasier which irritates me every time I see this episode.
Go on.
I know you know of it as well. It's the episode where Daphne's previous boyfriend, Clive, comes over from England.
Oh, yes, yes.
And she wants to get rid of him quickly. And it turns out, because he was a good-for-nothing layabout, never doing anything with his life. But it turns out, by the time he arrives, he's turned his life around. He's got a successful business. He's done everything she wished he would have done years ago. And he's still madly in love with her. And hilarity ensues. However, this clearly non-English actor playing Clive the Brit is putting on the worst English accent I've ever heard anyone do. Oh, it's
very Dick Van Dyke, isn't it?
It was like if Dick Van Dyke had been in a car accident. It was terrible. And it was a funny episode, but every time I see it, I think, God, I wish they'd got someone with a slightly better English accent than that.
Yeah, awful. I mean, we've talked about accents before. I mean, you get a film with a bad accent, I mean, it's completely ruined. And it must be the same when we watch American dramas and stuff like that, where we're not necessarily aware of the regional differences in dialects, you know?
Yeah.
So, because the other thing in Frasier is, you know, they say that Daphne's from Manchester, yet it's not a Manchester accent.
She's not even close.
So, I mean, it's a weird thing, but it's like, oh, it's close enough. So, yeah, but that doesn't annoy me, because that's just her... I don't even know if that's her natural accent, is it, Jane Leaves?
No, I don't think so, no. But it's funny you talk about the sort of differences in dialect, because that's another thing that bugs me a little bit about one of my other great passions in life, is I love nothing more than watching all these food tutorials and recipes and stuff on YouTube.
It's a bit of an obsession you've got, isn't it?
It is, but the problem is, I'd say 99% of the people I watch on YouTube are American.
Right.
And like you say, difference in dialect. I've almost had to learn a secondary language. and so much so that I thought I'd actually give you a test.
Okay.
To see how much you know. Because I'm sure you'll know some of them.
Is there a lot of like y'all?
No. It's all food.
Oh, so this is words for food.
So when I'm trying to follow a recipe, I've then got to stop while my brain catches up with what that translates to in English.
Okay, yeah.
Because if you go in and ask for these items in an English supermarket, they'll either give you the wrong thing or they'll just look at you funny and think, what's that?
Okay.
So I thought we'd do the test.
Go on. Okay, let's see how we do.
There's only 6 questions for you.
Okay.
And I'll start off fairly easy. So, what's the English equivalent of jelly?
Oh, jam.
You're off to a good start.
That's a jam. I was watching a quiz show the other day, and the question was something along the lines of, in a PJ sandwich, what preserve does the J stand for? And because I always answer out loud, I shouted jelly.
Well, technically, you were correct. Yeah, I mean...
But would they have accepted that if I'd said jelly?
Well, that would have caused all sorts of controversy, I think.
I know, but it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously
PB&J, peanut butter and jam, peanut butter and jelly. Oh, I think that could have... That's a tricky one.
But if I say jelly in an English quiz show, they're going to think
you'd technically be wrong.
Round trees jelly, aren't they? They're going to think of a wibbly wobbly thing on a plate.
Question number two, then. I'm going to flip you in reverse.
Okay.
Because what would... If you asked for jelly in America, what would you be given?
We'd get jam.
You'd get Jell-O.
Oh, right. If you wanted jelly, as in that jelly, you'd get Jell-O.
Yeah.
Right, so they get... Yes, that's Jell-O.
So if you actually wanted the UK jelly, you'd get Jell-O.
Right. So if I actually wanted a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I'd ask for peanut butter and Jell-O.
No, yes, if you wanted them to put our version of jelly into your peanut butter sandwich. You can see how confusing this is when I'm trying to write a recipe down. Okay, question number three.
Yeah.
If you were following an American recipe and it called for eggplant...
Oh, I always get this one wrong. Because there's also a thing that's zucchini.
Well, that's also on my list. So right, okay. Eggplant and zucchini, what are they?
I sometimes think they're the same, but they're not.
They are not the same thing. There's a clue.
Right, so eggplant, oh. Now, is it aubergine?
It is aubergine. You're 3 for 3 here.
Okay.
So now what's a zucchini?
Zucchini... Is that courgette?
It is courgette.
Oh, come on. I'm cooking now.
You are cooking now. You've got all the ingredients. Right. Two more to get.
Okay.
Cilantro.
Oh, I've never heard of that. Cilantro?
What would you be looking for in the English supermarkets if an American asked you to get them cilantro?
How are you spelling that?
C-I-L-A-N-T-R-O. Cilantro.
Cilantro. I'm trying to think if there's anything I can get from the word... I've genuinely never heard of this, cilantro.
I can give you a small clue. It's not much of a clue, but it's a small clue.
Let me ask, is it celery?
No, it's not celery.
It's not celery, okay. Is it a vegetable or a green thing?
It's a green thing.
Okay. Yeah, see, the fact you didn't say it's a vegetable, it's a green thing, which makes me think this could be a fruit.
I think you're going to have to fail this one because you did give me an answer that was incorrect.
Okay, what is it?
It's coriander.
Coriander. I would never have got that, I don't think.
And finally, what would you get me from the supermarket if I asked you to get me some arugula?
So is John Fashanu around? If I want to get some arugula. arugula. Oh, I don't know.
I'm never going to think of that word the same now. It's always going to be him yelling arugula as arugula.
Arugula. It's got to be. I don't know. Is it a pasta dish?
No, I don't think you're going to get this one. There is no hints or correlation between this one, really.
Arugula, go on.
Rocket.
Rocket?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have got that in a million years either. Why is that? I mean, I'd like to know the derivation of the words.
I don't care that much.
Is it from the Latin name for those plants, the herbs, right? So then perhaps that's from the Latin names for them.
Maybe. I mean, you did very well. You got four out of six.
While you're talking, I'm going to look up arugula.
You got 4 out of 6 right. You got jelly for jam, Jell-O for jelly, zucchini for courgette, which is a tricky one, eggplant for aubergine. The only two that tripped you up were arugula for rocket and cilantro for coriander. I think you should be very proud of yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with that. I'm just looking up arugula. I mean, again, like, because the scientific name for rocket is Eruca sativa, so that it doesn't... I mean, there's a little...
A-U-R Eruca.
Yeah.
A-R-U Eruca. A-R-U Arugula.
Yeah. It can be called just Rugula, Rucoli, Roquette, Rucola, Rucetta.
Well, that's probably how we call it rocket.
I mean, it's fascinating, isn't it,
but
really?
You can understand how my English brain regularly... I mean, I do know all of these, but it regularly jars me that I have to just... put extra thought process into following a fairly basic recipe.
Because I wonder if you went into a shop, like if you went into your local Sainsbury's and asked for arugula, would they know what you were talking about? Or would they just think you were doing a John Fashanu impression?
I suppose if you go into like an Aldi or a Sainsbury's, they probably won't know. Maybe if you go into a Waitrose, they might be able to help you. So any other little things that bug you?
Yeah, there are lots of things annoy me when I'm watching stuff. I get very annoyed if I'm watching films and there's too many cliches too soon.
Right.
So there's a film that everyone tells me is excellent. I think it even won Oscars, called Interstellar. It's a space sci-fi film. So right on my street, really, my type of film.
Okay.
And I started watching it. I don't know if it was the mood I was in, but it just seemed to me, in the first sort of 20 minutes, it was the most cliched film. Like, it just had all the cliches in. And I got so annoyed with it, I turned it off. And I phoned my mate, and I said, he said, "What did you think of it?" I said, "I didn't finish it, mate. I couldn't get to the end of it. It was just pissing me off." And this is going, but it's probably about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, maybe longer. And he's still on at me about giving it another go. But I was so annoyed by all the cliches. It was like, come on, who's written this? Like a 12-year-old?
Well, it's not. It's quite an annoying thing. Some films, it can't be helped, but I always cringe a little bit if they work the title of the film into the script.
Oh, I see.
Unless it's Titanic, where they can't really avoid saying Titanic. That's fair enough. But when it's like they just sneak in a phrase that they've also named the film, like, oh, it just,
well, like
makes
in a James Bond movie. Because that's all, yeah, that always happens. There's always a reference to the title there. But I don't mind that. That doesn't annoy me. There's one thing in a James Bond film that I do find slightly, and it ruins the film a little bit for me.
Is it that they all end exactly the same?
No. I don't know why you keep this. James Bond's a great film.
Saves the world, gets the girl, whatever.
I think they've got better. I can't really go back and watch. I can watch some of the early ones again. But I do find I like the Pierce Brosnan era, most of them. I didn't like his last one because that annoyed me. Again, that was, it seemed to me like an advert for cars, the whole film. It's a ridiculous scene where the cars were on ice for some reason. It just, that annoyed me. That was his last one. I think things had gone downhill, but the Daniel Craig ones, mate. And let me just say, I don't want to give too much away. All I'm going to say is you must watch the last one, the last Daniel Craig Bond film.
I almost certainly won't. So, I mean, you can tell me spoilers if you want. I won't. Okay.
Well, I'm going to tell you off air. I'm not going to say it on the podcast. I don't think it's fair. But all I'm going to say is you should watch it. It's a fucking amazing film. But there is one thing that really annoys me, and The Man with the Golden Gun, which is actually not a bad Bond film.
Is that? That's quite an old one, isn't it?
That's a Roger Moore
film. Is that where Bond was still a bit of a sort of
a bit
sex
comedy
pest?
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. But he's always, Bond's off, he's always a sex pest. But, yeah, I mean, this was height of sex pestness. but it was also in the Roger Moore kind of comedy Bond era, to a degree. And there's the famous scene where he's in the car and he jumps the river. The bridge is broken and he has to jump the bridge. And
yes,
the car kind of turns over in midair and then comes back down on the right side, does a 360 kind of flip.
Okay.
But in the film, they put a slide whistle sound effect over over the car going up and then the slide whistle coming down as the car goes into the air and comes down again. You think, why? I know this is slightly comedic, but
it does sound a bit Carry On.
Yeah, you've turned it into like an eating comedy. And
what was it, Goldfinger?
The Man with the Golden Gun. You see, that bit of the film.
That does ruin quite an expensive scene, I imagine.
Yeah, but they obviously felt it added to it at the time. They, from a creative standpoint, they obviously thought, well, that's a great sound effect to add to the scene, but I think it could have done without it.
Well, one last little thing that annoys me, you see it quite a bit in TV shows. The best example I can give you is one that always irritates me is, there was a series Jamie Oliver did once where he basically was going round to people's houses to, who couldn't cook at all, and he'd go through their cupboards or freezers and
trying to find some arugula.
Try and teach them something simple, how to cook something, instead of just getting takeaways all the time. But it would always start this segment with them in their house and then ding dong, and then a shot of from inside their hallway to the front door. The woman will go and open it, and she'll go, "Oh my God, it's Jamie!" And Jamie will say, "Hello, darling, how you doing?" And then he'll come into the house. And then I thought, well, surely the camera crew were a bit of a tip-off.
Bit of a giveaway.
That Jamie was on his way. But that's like contempt for the audience. Like, it's so contrived. And like, yeah, the camera crew in the hall that you had to walk past.
Yeah. I mean,
that wasn't a clue.
No. who was coming. She knew there was a camera crew for something.
Rubbish.
But surely she'd know. Yeah, they do that a lot, don't they? The whole, in a lot of these sort of shows where cookery or property or antique-y type things, where they go around someone's house and there's always like a shot from inside the house of the other person opening the door. Not always surprised, but it's so unnatural.
I don't that I dislike, but I don't mind that as much. It's when there's this faux surprise that, you know, Jamie Oliver's at my door. How did you get here?
Yeah, I feel bad about this, but are there actors that just annoy you and you can't watch them?
There's probably a few. Thing is, there'll be people who think badly of me for this.
Go on.
And I aren't... It's Dale Winton, all right?
Dale Winton?
Dale Winton, no longer with us.
God rest his soul.
I'm sure he was a lovely person. He just got on my nerves, Dale Winton. And it's not for any sort of nasty reasons or anything like that. It's just one of those people that I just had to switch off. Right. Couldn't stand him.
Right.
But there are other people that fall into the same... I can tolerate them in very small doses. Josh Widdicombe, I think he's a nice person.
Yeah.
I think he's a decent comedian. Oh, I just can't watch more than 5 minutes of him, though.
I find it's more actors, I find it. And I mean, I'm not saying they're not good actors, because clearly they are. They're very successful. But I find I don't really like Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise?
Yeah. I tell you where it comes from. I used to like him. And it's such a shame, because it's completely ruined what was one of my favourite films, that I can no longer really watch Tom Cruise things. I used to love Rain Man. I used to absolutely...
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cocktail.
No. Rain Man, I love that film. Absolutely love it. But I tell you, the two things changed it for me. One was just Tom Cruise as Tom Cruise, which is when he jumped up on a couch on some chat show and started banging on about...
Some chat show? Was it Oprah?
Was it Oprah? Yeah, wherever it was. jumping around, banging on about Scientology, and it was all a bit mental.
But I think he was banging on about Katie Holmes.
Was that about Katie Holmes?
How much he loved her, yeah.
Oh, dear. It's just, I think that was the moment I just knew he was crackers. I just knew he was off his nut, and then all the Scientology stuff. But from an acting point of view, it was Minority Report, which I went to see at the cinema. It's a not a bad film. But
I've not seen it. I've heard it's quite good, though.
Yeah, it is. But there was one scene in it where he's in the hotel room and he sort of, I think he has to have a little cry. And I said, I don't believe you. And so now I can't watch Tom Cruise films.
Wow. I'm trying to think if there's any others, but I think...
Stephen Graham's the same. Do you know Stephen Graham?
What would I know him from?
He's just one of those character actors you'd...
Oh, I know Stephen Graham. You don't like him?
No.
Oh, he's great.
We see this here. Because I tell you what it is, it's one thing he does that just means I can't stand watching him now.
Go on.
Because whatever he always plays a character that has to get angry. He's kind of, if they need an angry character, let's book Stephen Graham because he can do angry. But he does angry in the same way, gritted teeth. I can't watch it anymore because I've watched a couple of things with him and he was just doing this angry acting and I could
see... So it's not that his gritted teeth anger wasn't good enough. It's that he's not got enough of a range of anger that he can display.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I could see he was acting. It wasn't real to me. It was like, I've got to act angry. So the way I can express anger is speaking to gritted teeth. I mean, it might just be a bit of a Scouse thing going on. He's a Scouser, so maybe they do grit their teeth like, oh, fucking hell. But I can't watch him anymore.
Oh, that's a shame. You're going to miss out on some great stuff.
I know. People are really annoyed at me that I can't get to grips with him, but I can't. I have to be honest about it when they say, oh, Stephen Graham's in it. I think, oh, that's a shame. not sure I can sit through it now.
So people are recommending him as a great selling point for the project, and you just think, oh, that's a shame.
And he did the last thing I watched him in, and it was absolute shite. He did this comedy thing with Daniel Mays, who I think is a pretty good actor. But it was a weird thing. It was called Code 404 or something. And they were like policemen. But the Daniel Mays character was like a robot. It was absolute shit.
Sounds it.
And I sat through the first series of it because I thought I've invested some time in it. And I just thought, no, I'm done with this. And I'm sorry, Stephen Graham, this is the last bit of my life I'm devoting to anything you're in. We'll be right back.
So Trev, just before we wrap up,
yeah,
I came across this story that I thought you in particular would enjoy.
Okay.
Because I know how much you tend to hate money. The concept of money and what money does to
this
some
week's
people.
Been a lot about the things I hate, hasn't it?
It has. So that's why I thought I'd tell you.
Go on.
So it was a video I stumbled across. I'm not sure how old this was when it happened, but basically it happened in America, and there were people queuing for hours and hours and hours to get their hands on the brand new iPhone that was coming out.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And one lad in particular, he and his mates had got there super, super early before even anyone else, and they had queued for hours and hours.
Have you ever queued for anything?
No, not for that long. This was possibly approaching double figures.
Oh, wow.
Of queuing. So much so that people brought tents and
buy
pop-up
it the
chairs.
Next day.
Oh. Well, they had to be, you know, first to get their hands on it.
Oh.
And then, with 15 minutes to go, until the store opens, a woman comes to the front of the queue.
Was it Holly Willoughby?
Oh, very good. And she says to this guy that she has loads of money, and she wants to buy his slot in the queue.
Oh, fuck off.
Well, then, this is what part of the fun I thought would be, what price would you, Trev Smith, give up your place in that, your number one spot in that queue, when I know that you hate people sort of flaunting their wad, so to speak. And I thought, you wouldn't like that. But again, at some point, money talks, right? Which is one of the things she says.
Well, see, I mean, this is the... Because when you start... It's not that I hate money. I understand we all have to have money. We all need to earn money to live. But I think we've got to a point in the world... And I don't know when this happened, because I'm not saying this is a new thing. I just think it gets just a little bit worse every year. Is that when money... It's almost like a religion. It's the greed. It's... Because there's often people quote the Bible and they say, oh, you know, money is the root of all evil. But I think, I might be wrong on this, I'll have to ask my neighbour, but I think the reference is the love of money is the root of all evil.
Okay.
And I'll quite happily go along with that, because I think there is this thing that people have, and it's, I don't understand it. I've never had a love for money. I understand I have to have it, but I've never had a love for it. That's not to say that if I had money... I'd be upset about it, but I'd like to think I'd do some good. Now, you ask about the sort of when money talks. Now, see, if I've queued, I mean, this is a difficult scenario to put myself into, because I wouldn't queue. I'm not that materialistic that I'd need to have the first iPhone in the shop.
Fair enough.
But if that's my goal, to be there to get that first phone in the shop, I think I'm the sort of person where nothing would deter me from achieving that goal. That's what I'm here for. So,
okay,
you know, and when they say buy my place, I mean, what they're saying is that I now disappear from the queue.
You leave
entirely.
The queue because you can't queue cut, because that would annoy everyone else behind you.
Yes.
We'll come to those people in a minute. You can't queue cut.
No.
But what you can do is basically buy his space. So right. He would therefore have to leave the queue.
Go to the back of the queue or just piss
yes,
off.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, what's she offering?
Well,
I feel this
how
is like
much?
A game show thing.
What price? Could I buy your first place in the queue for 200 quid?
No.
300?
No.
500?
No. I feel like this is like one of those... sort of bartering things that you see on the TV where I want to say to you, you know, nowhere near, mate.
And this is
nowhere
real near. Money, you know, I'm wadging yeah. my wad in your face, mate. 500 notes for nothing.
But
all you have to do is leave.
But I've been here for 12 hours.
Well, you've made 500 quid in 12 hours then, haven't you?
Yeah, it's not enough, because the reason I've been queuing for 12 hours is because I'm so desperate to get the very first iPhone out of this store. So you're going to have to up the ante a little bit, because I put in a lot of time and effort into achieving a goal here.
Well, I'll put you out of your misery.
Yeah.
Eventually, they come to a deal where she buys his first place for $800.
I think that's too... I thought you were going to say like 8,000 or something.
So, no, $800.
$800.
So, she then jokes as she walks into the front of the queue, as he leaves, ha, money talks.
Oh.
And then when she's rightfully, you know, done her deal and bought, he's left his two friends behind, she's bought her number one place in the queue, she then reveals to the queue, I've got $100,000 in my bank account. I'm going to buy every single iPhone in this store.
Oh, what a bitch.
So now she's bought first place in the queue, but she's also made the rest of the queue redundant.
Wow.
All these people have queued up. At least he got $800. They're not getting the thing now.
The question I have is, what are her motives? Is she trying to make some point to the queue?
No.
About... Or is she just a selfish...
This is why you're going to hate her even more, I'm
self-obsessed
afraid.
Self-obsessed cow.
Her plan is she will buy up every single iPhone, $100,000 worth that she's got with her, so that the whole area, no one can get their hands on the brand new iPhone. She's got the monopoly on iPhones.
Right.
Then she'll put them on eBay at a massively heightened price.
Yeah.
So that everyone else who wants them then has to pay her over the odds than she paid, and then she gets a massive return on her $100,000, and she's laughing all her way to the bank.
Dreadful woman.
You and I hate that. We think, what a bitch, right? Yeah. There'll be some people who think, well, that's, you know, I think we both know someone like this who would think, well, that's a very savvy business move. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We saw growth in Q3.
Bear in mind, she paid $800 for the privilege of being first in this queue. She then swans in and says, I'll take every iPhone you've got, please. I've got $100,000. And with three words, the member of staff ruins her fucking day.
Brilliant, come on.
One per customer.
Ah, oh, that's it. But there we are, that's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a few recommendations for you. What you got, Ben?
First of all, I've got one which actually is a two-for-one deal, this one.
Oh, a twofer?
Yeah, basically, I know that anyone who might listen or enjoy our podcasts, both of them, they might like sort of silly podcasts. I think that's a fair assumption to make, right?
Yeah.
Recently, I've been
shit ones.
I've been diversifying my podcast listening, where I'm including all kinds of podcasts, and I'm really getting into different genres. And sometimes I fancy a bit of silliness, sometimes I think a bit of news, sometimes. But recently, I found a whole new thing. I quite like crime stories and mysteries and grisly things, and I know that you're very into this sort of thing.
Well, because the big one that's it's years old now, but there was one called Serial, wasn't there, years ago, which was kind of one of the big first successful podcasts after kind of Ricky Gervais, and that was a true crime one.
Well, this isn't one particular series, I should point out. It's every week, every episode is a brand new story.
Okay, well, in some ways that's a bit better.
And it's basically a YouTube channel called Mr. Ballin. MrBallen. Okay. Mr. Ballin. And he hosts these stories on YouTube video format, and they're very well told, quite long in time, about 40 minutes sort of ish, roughly minimum, or upward. It can be longer, can be shorter. And they're quite detailed, very well told stories of these true crimes, very compelling. And I recently found out that not only has he got a YouTube channel that you can watch at home or in your leisure, if you're out and about like I am for my job and you've got a lot of time for podcast listening, he does it again, but also in podcast format. Mm. And also some of the podcast, or most of the podcast, is exclusive stuff that you can't find on YouTube. So if you really love it, you can watch both and you've got twice as much content then. But I can't recommend it highly enough if you like that kind of thing.
And what's the podcast actually called?
The Mr. Ballin podcast.
I was just called the Mr. Ballin.
If you put Mr. Ballin into your, wherever you find your podcast, you'll find it. If you put it into YouTube, you'll find it. He's got a lot of subscribers. It's a very popular thing. All I would suggest is a bit like listening to the news all day, possibly, unless you're very macabre, binging on it might get a bit tiresome.
Okay.
For your mental health.
Two or three in a row. I wonder if, wouldn't it be nice if Mr. Ballin met someone with the surname Chain and they hyphenate Mr. Mrs. Ballin Chain.
Hyphenated surname, obviously. Yeah.
Right, I've got a couple of things to recommend. A couple of documentary things. As you know, I like a good documentary. Channel 4 had a brilliant documentary this week.
Are you still chuckling at your ball and chain joke there?
It did make me laugh. I wasn't really listening to the end of what you were talking about then, because I was just so excited about the joke. A brilliant documentary called Raising the Mary Rose, The Lost Tapes. And it's the gripping story of how 40 years ago the Mary Rose was raised from the bottom of the sea.
Right.
Desperate race against time, Ben. You know about the Mary Rose, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming the missing tapes weren't discovered on board after all this time.
Now, these were like the tapes of the operation to lift it. The sort of behind-the-scenes look and the arguments that were going on between the factions involved in the operation, what nearly went wrong. Yeah, it was quite... it was quite a feat to bring it up. And it nearly went wrong on several occasions. But I found it fascinating, Ben.
I know I tease you for some of your things, but that does sound quite interesting, that one.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's called Raising the Mary Rose, The Lost Tapes. That's on All Four. Very exciting. The BBC have started their third and final series of Rise of the Nazis. And this is the downfall. So this is the episodes that... sort of covering the end of the war and the downfall of the Nazis. I've watched the first episode.
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Hit the dies. I will spoil that for you. But, I think there's been enough water under the bridge to spoil that one. So that's very enjoyable to watch. And the final thing I'm going to recommend is a comedy drama on the BBC called Am I Being Unreasonable? Starring Daisy May Cooper, who's also co-written it.
Oh, I remember her from Taskmaster. She's very funny.
She is brilliant. Do you know what? Everything I've seen her in, she did This Country. That was the first thing I saw her in. I love that. If you've never seen This Country, have a look at that. That's kind of like a strange fly-on-the-wall documentary of people living in a small country village. And she's just brilliant. Her brother and her star in that and co-wrote that. She was also recently in Witchfinder, which is a brilliant comedy. I found out recently they're not commissioning that for another series, which I think is a real shame. Tim Key was in that. That was absolutely brilliant. But anyway, she's got this thing now called Am I Being Unreasonable? I binged a lot. They're only six episodes, half hour each. They are so funny and so good.
I might give that a go.
So that's on the iPlayer. So lots for you to kill some time with this week and avoid, I don't know, the shit of the world. And that's it from us. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And let us know little things that annoy you in films.
Oh, please do.
Or TV shows. We'd love to hear all about that. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.